The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
It's a good Wednesday. Thanks for being with us. We have Espo on the Suns. We have Annie Myers Drysdale on the Suns. We have a lot to get to after last night's game number two loss. Suns and the Lakers tied up at a game apiece. We're brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. I'm not happy today. So in the NBA playoffs, you cannot be down or even a game apiece. You have to protect home court advantage. And last night, there are a lot of factors that went into the game with the Suns losing to the Lakers. All right, so right down the list. Jay Crowder gets kicked in the nuts by Anthony Davis on a cheap shot, flagrant one. Nobody goes over and does anything, says anything, gets in the face of Anthony Davis. That's a problem. You have to have grit. You have to have that stuff. And I'm not blaming Jay Crowder. He's gasping for air. You guys ever been whacked like that playing basketball? I took a charge once in high school. I'll go all the way back to high school. Guy kneed me right straight on. It was in their gym. It was my first varsity game. And I was laid out for 5 minutes and people are laughing at me because I can't get up. I'm just... That was a cheap shot last night. It was. And so when you don't have anybody coming up, that alarmed me. I'm not quite sure what is going on with Monty Williams and his rotation. I love what Frank Vogel did last night for the Lakers. Frank Vogel, within, I don't know, it was 8-9 minutes, he'd already gone through 11 players on his roster, getting them out on the floor. So, yeah, we saw Marc Gasol, who could barely move, and we saw Markieff Morris. I know Suns fans don't like Markieff Morris, but I'm just looking at this objectively and saying, you put these guys out on the floor, see if you can get something going, get the guys' rhythm and into the game and into the rotation. And Marc Gasol came up with a huge three last night towards the end. The refs are not going to call Anthony Davis being in the key. So please, I can't tell you to do anything, but you've got to deal with it. I know it's not fair. I know it's not right. It is the Lakers. This isn't whining. It's just a fact. Go see how many times they stand in the key, the Lakers bigs. On the other side of the coin, remember when Andre Drummond had the 1-2-3-4 tip? That's where, I mean, DeAndre Ayton's put up some nice numbers, but there's some rebounds that he's missed. Dario Saric is an empty jersey. That's what he is. He's an empty jersey. Runs up and down the floor. I pick up the stat sheet today and I look at it and it's 0 for 1 in 15 minutes, one shot. It is two rebounds. It's a couple fouls, a couple turnovers. Not much there. That's an empty jersey. And so that's a problem for them. Why we don't see more of Torrey Craig, I don't know. I would like to see more of Torrey Craig in game number two. But game three. The overriding takeaway that I have on this is Chris Paul needs to sit game number three. He does. And you may be on the side of the street of having Chris Paul out on the floor is better than not having Chris Paul, even if it's just limited minutes, even if it's just 8, 10, 12 minutes. Well, here's the thing. If you put Chris Paul out on the floor, the series is not going to be decided in game number three. And I'm not saying they'd even lose without Chris Paul. You have guys that need to step up. We hear that all the time. You got to step it up. Got to step it up. If you're Etuan Moore, you get out on the floor. Your campaign, who's played pretty well, and he's actually shown some grit so far. You have Javon Carter, who's more of a defensive guy. So it's not like they don't have players. And yes, the Lakers would go at them. But I'm not afraid of Caldwell Pope. Are you? Schroeder is really good. Had a great game last night. But if you sit Chris Paul down, remember, there's two days off in between game number four. They're off Friday. They're off Saturday. So look, if you sit Chris Paul down today, and today is treatment day, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. By the fifth day, okay, that's some time, and it may be much, much worse, all right? We have no idea how bad it is. I'm using the hockey term here, upper body injury, because I don't know if it's a neck, I don't know if it's a shoulder. They say it's a shoulder, but then I hear it's a neck. I don't know what's fact on this deal. But I do know this, that if you put him out on the floor and in the second minute he dives for a loose ball and he's done for the series, we'll never know. And if you go out there, and I'm not in favor. I mean, obviously, if they'd won last night, you could just sit him. obviously. But I'm not even rolling the dice here because the series isn't going to be decided in tomorrow night's game number three. It isn't. I think you have a better opportunity to steal a game in L.A. with Chris Paul being better in 4 days, 5 days than he is today or was last night. So, you know, that's my thinking on that. You know, other than that, I go up and down the numbers here, and I thought that the way that Anthony Davis played in his 40 minutes with 34 points and his 10 rebounds and his 7 assists, but some of that was him just camping out inside. You can't compete against that. Drummond, 7 of 11 with 12 boards, 15 points. This is where the Lakers did a very good job of adding him late in the season. Give him some grit on the inside. Marc Gasol, 6 points, 2 of 4. And then, you know LeBron's going to do his thing. You know LeBron's going to have the big plays. It's going to get everybody excited. But the people around him were able to give a little bit more. The Suns so far, out of Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson, not much. Not much. Now, is today a panic day? Is today a day where the sky is falling? Well, we'll find out next. Actually, both of our guests today. Espo is on the other side. Greg Esposito with the Sun Solar Panel. And then Annie Myers Drysdale, the Hall of Famer. That's all straight ahead. We appreciate you being with us on this Wednesday. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sismat. All right, as promised, Espo is with us. And right off the top, I owe Espo a ham sandwich. Because when we got together last time, I said, there's going to be games in the 80s. And I didn't have to define low 80s or high 80s. And I was looking pretty good last night in the first quarter. And then it fell apart. And Greg was like, no, there's not going to be any games in the 80s. So I owe you a ham sandwich. What do you make out of this series 2 games in?
I think it's exactly what the Suns needed to do. They need to just find a way to split the games here, split the games in L.A., and then you're looking at a 3-game series with 2 in Phoenix, and you feel pretty confident. And this is one of the best road teams, at least in the regular season. We obviously haven't seen them in the playoffs on the road, but this is one of the best regular season road teams in the league. So I think they held serve, especially when you consider that they haven't had a full-strength Chris Paul for a majority of these 2 games so far.
So let's go through this. I'm going to throw names at you, and I'll start with the Chris Paul situation. I'm of the opinion that he should sit in game 3 because, look, this is going to go at least 5 now, but probably longer than that. And I think 3 days, 4 days to rest, recuperate is probably the best thing for him. Where are you at on Chris Paul and whether he should play or not?
I would agree if this weren't the first road playoff game for a majority of this roster. I think Chris Paul, whether he's 100% or not, can have a calming effect on these guys going into Staples Center and having to face the Lakers in LA. I know there'll be fewer fans than usual. It won't be the same kind of atmosphere, but it still is a first. And that's my only hesitation with sitting Chris Paul. Now, campaign made it where it's a lot easier to consider it after what he did in game 2 and what he's done all year. But I just worry about that factor. Even if you limit Chris Paul's minutes, just the fact that he'll be out there on the floor from time to time to help these guys navigate game 1 on the road or their first game on the road, I think is very important for this team.
Greg, he just doesn't look like he's got much of anything right now. Like the Lakers were sagging off, and I know he has Chris Paul, and he has experience, and he has a swagger, and all that. But the Lakers, when he's out there, they just backed away from him and said, we know you're not going to do anything. It's like he's a decoy out there, and that's fine. It's fine to have a point guard who's that well-regarded. But if you give him 4 full days, because there is a couple of days in between games 3 and 4, which to me makes a difference – to me, I would say you sit him and you bring him back at full strength, and it's better to have him at full strength than 70% or maybe even less. Who knows what he is like today?
If they had won on Tuesday night, I think that certainly would be an easier decision to make because you'd have a little bit more wiggle room. I don't envy Monty having to try to figure out how to handle that because I see it on both sides. I just worry that And I guess you'd still have CP3 on the bench, but without him on the court, do certain moments potentially become a little big for these guys and they're not quite prepared for it? It didn't happen in game one and game two. These Suns young guys came out and it didn't seem to impact them, but I don't know. And is there any guarantee if you sit him out that it does put him at 100% for game four, game five? I'm not sure. Obviously, I'm not a doctor and I'm not going to play one here on the Brad Sesmatch show. But you know, how long is a stinger and a muscle issue going to last? I mean, does that extra game off actually help or is it not going to matter all that much? I don't know. And those are the kind of questions that Monty's going to have to work with the medical staff to truly understand and figure out.
Okay. Espo's with us for a few minutes. We both agree that campaign did show quite a bit. However, campaign going head to head for 40 minutes, 35 minutes, and Etuan Moore's got to then be factored into the equation. So I look at that and say, it sounds great. I know about the whole next man up, but do you start to give minutes to someone else that are even heavier than what they're used to playing? And by that, I mean, is Devin going to be out there more? He played 40 last night. Is Devin going to be out there 44 minutes, 42 minutes? And you're just not going to be able to get him off the court. And he's going to have to move over and run the show for a little bit.
Well, look, this is why James Jones built such a deep roster. And you need to consider Etuan Moore, Langston Galloway. Some of the problem in Tuesday night's game was they weren't hitting open shots. Well, guys like Etuan and Langston can hit those kind of shots. So I think you may add a little bit to the mix if you expand that rotation and give those guys some minutes. I kind of wish they had done it on Tuesday when they weren't hitting those shots to try to give them a spark in that third quarter. Because the game came down to the Lakers hit a couple more threes than the Suns did, and that was what spread out that lead. I mean, that was really the difference. If the Suns had been able to hit a few more threes, and that's what Etuan and Langston can do. I don't think you push Devin's minutes too far and force him to handle the ball too much, because we've seen what that leads to. It's a less effective Devin Booker. And you can't afford to have a less effective Devin Booker in any of these games at this point. So I would expand that rotation. If you're gonna let Chris Paul rest, you're gonna have to expand that rotation. And don't forget, you can bring in Javon Carter if you need a defensive guy in there as well. So there are options, and that's why James Jones built the roster this way.
I have to tell you, I loved what Frank Vogel did last night. He had 11 players in the game in the first 9 minutes, and he figured out Marc Gasol could give them just a little bit. It's not pretty. You know, Markieff Morris, nobody likes him in Phoenix, but for 4 minutes on the floor, he's not going to hurt you. If you're the Lakers, I'm turning this around the Lakers side of things. I liked how they expanded their rotation. I liked how they expanded their depth. On the Suns' end of things, they're not going to get a call on Anthony Davis camping out in the key. It's not going to happen, Greg. And that's all he was doing last night. There was times where I saw LeBron in there 6, 7, 8 seconds. They're not going to call it. And so I can't whine about officiating at this point. Anthony Davis just camps out and Drummond camps out. Drummond, on the other hand, had the 4-tip in the first quarter, and DeAndre is standing there. You know, DeAndre's had nice numbers, but look, there's some plays that were left out on the floor by the big man inside.
Well, there were plays left on the floor by everybody in Tuesday night's game. And if, to your point, Frank Vogel adjusted. A 7-game series is a chess match. And that's Frank Vogel made the right moves after Monty made the right moves in game one.
Why now no Kaminsky? Why very few minutes for Torrey Craig? Why Dario? You know, I'm just looking at this and saying, where are you going with these moves?
Well, and that's what you need to see Monty Williams do going into game three. And you hit exactly the area that stood out to me and we knew was going to be a glaring issue for this team, is those backup center minutes and some of those power forward minutes. Dario Saric has proven through most of the back half of the season, but in the first two games in this series, that he shouldn't be on the floor. He was sloppy. he was incapable of.
He was an empty jersey. He's an empty jersey. Yeah. The empty jersey runs up and down the floor. Looks nice, but at the end of the day, when I get the stat sheet, empty jersey.
Let's be honest. He doesn't even look nice with the hairdo and the mustache. So it's just a he's just a guy running up and down the court.
That's good.
But look, I want Torrey Craig and that hustle. Frank Kaminsky, whether you like him or not, when you can't deny when he's been out there this year that he has some weird impact on this team in a positive way. I mean, when he started, they went on a big run, and it made no sense. But there's obviously something about Frank's energy that helps this team, and he comes in and he plays minutes. Now, I don't want big minutes for Frank Kaminsky, but if you played him for five of the minutes that Dario played in Tuesday night's game, you may have seen a different outcome just based on the energy. Dario's not working. Try something different. Torrey Craig had a nice dunk in his limited minutes. Give him some run. That's what you're going to have to do in game three and make those adjustments to be able to hang with the Lakers.
I have not seen any badass out of this team yet. Okay. And, yeah. And when you hip check a guy, okay. But when you wrap a guy up and just say, yeah, that's not happening. You know, I think last night Cam Payne did a wrap up job on a breakaway. Okay, great. But I need to see some grit. You know, Jay Crowder had the cheap fouls. It was a total cheap shot by Anthony Davis. Was very disappointed. Nobody asked Jay Crowder about that after the game. Like, what the heck happened? Instead, it's 3 minutes of stuff. And so I've not seen chippiness as much as I'd like to see outside of Cameron in game one where he got thrown out. You cannot let the Lakers just throw you around on the inside like they did in game number two. Can't do it.
Yeah, I think Campaign's the only one that has played with a real edge. And it feels like when CP3 went down with that injury, it threw something off with that. I don't know what it was, but they just haven't seemed to play with that edge. Everybody thought, oh, this is a different kind of Suns team. They're the agitator where they haven't been in the past. And you're right. In the first two games, you just really haven't seen that. You've seen the Lakers force the issue in those ways. And that's not – the Suns just aren't going to win like that. They need to get back to playing with that edge, irritating this Lakers team. And maybe it's a little bit of, wow, it's LeBron and AD on the other side, because with a young team, sometimes you fall into that. But you need – look, I've said it all season. As Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges go, so will this Suns team. And those are two guys that you need to see the edge from, and you need to see the offense from, and you didn't on Tuesday night, and it cost the Suns team.
Yeah. And I'm not as concerned about the offense on this. I'm not. You can't let them come bully you. You cannot let Drummond just stand inside, especially if they're not going to call it. Then you've just got to go at it, and blood may be blood. It may be spilled on the floor. That's where we're at here in postseason. Anthony Davis, blood might be spilled. LeBron comes in, it's going to be a hard foul, and you may get run for a game. But if you're not going to go down without a fight, and I've not seen the fight as much, if Anthony Davis is going to kick you in the nuts and we're not going to have any response from it, okay, those guys can bully you and bloody your nose. And that may be the lack of experience you're talking about with Bridges and Cam Johnson and all the other players that have never been in this space before.
Yeah, I was surprised nobody really got up in Anthony Davis's face after he violated Jay Crowder. I don't think there's any other way you can say what he did there. And there wasn't really a response. But I don't know who you're going to throw at Andre Drummond that you're going to be able to make that. Because you really can't have DeAndre Ayton, you know, waste fouls and potentially get in foul trouble. Because if he's not on the floor, you're in a world of hurt at that point because you have nobody to replace him. I don't know if it's, hey, Frank, you've got six fouls, go make them worth it against Andre Drummond, but you're lacking any depth at that position, and that's why it's problematic. And Andre Drummond isn't a good player anymore, but he's still a very, very big body, and you don't have guys that can match up with a very, very big body outside of DeAndre Ayton. It's the one flaw in this roster that they didn't address, and the Lakers and Frank Vogel are trying to exploit it. That's why you saw Marc Gasol get minutes last night as well in the loss for the Suns, because Frank Vogel understands that's the hole here.
Yeah, no. Frank can use Gasol for six fouls. He can use Drummond for six fouls. He can go right down his roster and find guys to plug inside and say, okay, as long as LeBron and Anthony are out there doing their thing, I don't care if Markieff Morris goes and gets five fouls. I don't care. I don't care if he lays anybody out. I expect to see more minutes out of him, in fact. So all this to say, you're happy with a split in Phoenix, because I'm not. I think in the playoffs, you have to take care of home court. You cannot say they held serve, as you said off the top. That's crazy. That's coming from a fan.
I wouldn't say I'm happy. All right.
You said they accomplished. What are you talking about?
Well, I didn't say I was happy. They came out. They made a statement in game one. If you thought the Lakers weren't going to fight back hard in game two, you're kidding yourself. I'm okay with them getting a split because they are.
How
good
can that
team.
Be? You're a Suns fan, right?
Because logically, I just think they're going to get one in L.A. based on the way they've played on the road.
How can you believe that? How can you believe it? It's regular season basketball, Espo.
Look, if CP3 weren't injured, the expectation were two in Phoenix. But you did not have, some people say he's your first best player, some people say he's your second, but you did not have one of your two best players playing at full strength at a position that runs everything for this team. So when you look at it in that lens, splitting is okay, but you got to take care of business in LA. You can't come back down 3-1 because then it becomes extremely problematic, and then you have no margin for error. I think they go into LA, they get one. I've said this is a 7-game series since we knew it was the Lakers. It's going to go 7.
Even with Chris Paul hurt. You're not going to change your stance.
I still think it goes 7, even if Chris Paul does not get back to 100%.
Wow. Okay, what kind of bread and what kind of stuff do you want on your ham sandwich?
It surprised me. I'll take whatever you're good with. You.
All right, there is Espo. He is very optimistic the day after. He is just, you're puppies and puffy clouds today with the Suns.
Their big man situation is problematic. I'm not happy about that. And I've pounded the table since the trade deadline. They should have addressed it. It's rearing its ugly head now.
Wow, there's Greg getting after it. Espo, the solar panel, he gets it done. And we're back with more after this timeout. All right, as promised, we are going to focus on a lot here with Annie Myers-Drysdale, Basketball Hall of Famer, Arizona Sports Hall of Fame. We have the Suns game from last night. We have the Mercury going tonight. We have this deal where Diana Taurasi is hurt and Chris Paul is hurt. So I'm going to ask her to play doctor for a little bit too, because I know you can do it all. It's good seeing you. How are you?
It's great to see you, Brad, always.
Yeah. And there's some other things I want to get to you with you as well, but let's just start with the injury side of things. I'll put you over on Monty's side first, and then we'll get to Diana. Do you sit Chris Paul for game 3 based on what you've seen?
You know, the hard part, obviously not going to practices, not being a part of what the medical team does or the trainers and so forth. I don't think that that's fair, but we don't know what the injury is. We don't know the extent. As Devin Booker said after the game, you know, we've got about a day for him to do, you know, treatment with the trainers and so forth. So we saw last night that it's so difficult for him to handle the ball, to be able to put it on the floor and just even grip it, let alone get his shots off. So, you know, is he going to sit the whole series? Is he going to be able to come back? And what is Monty going to do? So, sir, I think any coach has to make adjustments when they feel that one of their players is not going to be up to their standards. So certainly, you know, and all the players have said, guys have got to step up. And they have all year long when other players have been out. And so I thought campaign came in and did a great job.
You know, the thing is, when you have a warrior, I know Monty referred to him last night as that, or the same thing with Diana, right? Is it a different deal when you have to sit with them or look them in the eye and say, you're not going to play, or you're not going to play as much because you know you're going to get that blowback, whether we see it publicly or not, right? Or not?
I don't know if it's a blowback, but like you said, they're so competitive and they want to be on the floor. I've been there, so absolutely,
sure.
It's not fun. You don't like sitting on the bench and being a part of where you are today as a team, and you know that you were a part of helping get the team there. But certainly I know too and understand that other players have to step up, and they have. And I've seen teams too where they have not had their best players on the floor, and other guys, you know, it works for them. You know, right. There's other guys that are hungry. And I really thought that the flagrant one early on in the game really threw everybody, because it was the time was, and I don't know what your opinion was, a flagrant one or a flagrant two. I mean, I think I've seen throughout the season then when guys have gotten hit below the waist that, and it looked pretty intentional. And somebody said to me last night, they said, oh, well, he always shoots like that. Well, if he always shoots like that and somebody gets hit, it's an offensive foul. And that's basically all it was. I mean, a flagrant one, because we shot free throws and so forth. But, you know, that was looked pretty deliberate, because Jay was pretty far away. But that really seemed to really set the tone for where the game was going, because for Anthony Davis to get 21 free throws.
Right.
And yeah, Book was 17 and 17. There's no question. But I just thought it set the tone because how the game was being called.
Well, and I think in Jay did not talk about that specific play last night afterwards in his limited time. They get to ask like five questions and that's it. So nobody right. said to him, hey, what happened? Which is a whole other topic for me entirely, because I would have loved to have just said, so what happened? Let's walk through this. Because I agree with you. That was a changing moment. But to that end, I thought Jay afterwards said, we did not work together as a team in certain stretches. We had a little bit too much individualism, and that's got to change. I love his grit. I love his honesty. Gosh, Andy, I love his honesty. There's none of this sugarcoating nonsense of like everything's great and peaches and puppies. No, it's the playoffs. So I think that there's something to that. Did you see anything last night that's like, you know, we got to clean this up or clean that up?
Well, certainly the execution in the sense of, we saw the first game, Book was running that pick and roll. Lakers could not stop it. Well, they doubled him up all night long. And so I think that we had to make adjustments. I thought when Campaign came in, they couldn't stop him going to the basket. Mm-hmm. So, you know, keep running it. I think sometimes we do get caught standing around, the ball sticks. And Monty has talked all year long about ball movement, about body movement. Mm-hmm. And there were times we were just passing around the horn. You know, everybody was set up side of the circle and nobody was cutting, nobody was posting up, nobody was setting a back pick or a pick on the ball. And so we got some tough looks at the basket with the shot clock running down. And so I think execution on the offense, and give the Lakers credit as far as the defense that they came out with and getting the ball out of Book's hands. But from there, we've got to adjust. If we're going to get it out of his hands, then if he's double teamed, somebody's open. And so I think that we've got to be able to execute a little bit more, like Jay Crowder was saying last night, to be able to, you know, let's do it together. Because the Lakers are long and tall, and
really
there's
long.
No question we're capable of beating them. We beat them twice during the season. And but I just think that, you know, even without Chris, we'll make the adjustments, and guys are going to step up, and Monty will make the adjustments.
Yeah, and adjustments, and then you can't turn the ball over 21 times. And I mean, that stuff's the obvious part that can be cleaned up. All right, the Hall of Famer Annie Myers-Drysdale with us for a few minutes. Mercury play tonight against Las Vegas. No Diana Taurasi. What's your thought on Di and when we will see her back?
Yeah, well, they're predicting at least 4 weeks. And I had a separated sternum when I was playing. Oof. And I was not happy that I couldn't play. They wouldn't put me in. But I understand it's so difficult to breathe. I'm in awe of her and the fact that she played several games after that and probably didn't say anything, but she just is amazing. And the fact that she only needs 6 points to get to 9,000 points. I mean, it's incredible how she's able to score, but her leadership and she's the same thing. She'll be on the bench and she'll be in everybody's faces and be that other coach. and getting in their heads and seeing how the game is playing out and where the execution needs to be and what they need to do. And certainly I think Brittany Griner needs to step up against Liz Cambage, but you know, they've got Asia Wilson, who's, you know, one of the top players in the league, and Young is playing really well this year. So, I mean, certainly Vegas is deep. And but I know this is a Mercury team that's hungry too. And even with the two new players with Nurse and Walker, I think they're very talented, and I think we're very capable of putting points on the board.
When the Mercury first started, Jerry Colangelo came to me and said, "I want you to do the play-by-play of the Mercury." And I'd been a play-by-play guy through the years out in California, and I did the first couple of seasons, and I really, really enjoyed it. And then the Diamondbacks came along, and I had to transition over there. When I watch the game and I watch the league, I feel like the footing is so much better, but I look at the media partners and they talk a good game at times, and I'm not sitting here to do a bash session, nor am I asking you to do one. I think the league is in much better footing than it was even 5-6 years ago. Your thoughts on where it is and how the league is progressing and the franchise here in Phoenix with all the star power?
Well, certainly being in our 25th year, I'm ecstatic. And I know we're going to be around for another 25 years. I think what's been difficult seeing the process of those 25 years is the comparison that the media has made through the NBA. And where we are in 25 years, where the NBA was in 25 years, we're probably ahead of that as far as the league. But the comparison's been to the NBA as far as where they are now. And that's been difficult. Certainly trying to have teams that were in markets and then they, whether they folded or moved and so forth. And we were always a fledgling league. And the media has not been kind. And I still think that they're not. But, you know, social media has really changed things. And the positive of players having a voice and being able to, whether it's social issues with race or transgender or women's rights, and there's so many different things that there's a voice out there, and I think there's no question that sponsors see that. Mm-hmm. The media still is, I think you're absolutely right, behind. When ESPN is your partner and they're not talking about the opening of the season in the 25th year and showing highlights of games, and they show one highlight of Sabrina Ionescu hitting that game-winning shot, which is a great shot, but that's all they show. You know, you can't give 3 minutes on SportsCenter to the WNBA. So sometimes there is, for me, lip service, but there are so many more articles that are being written. There are so many more outlets today, right, and then podcasts and so forth. So there is a lot of information out there and people talking about the league. And now we're in a generation too where our players that started playing, they're becoming the coaches, they're becoming the announcers. Mm-hmm. And just as we've seen through the NBA over those years in that transition.
It's interesting as a father of two daughters, how I would take them to watch the Mercury when I was doing the games. And then even when I transitioned over, and I would still take them to games, I'd still hang around. And when I'm out speaking, I talk glowingly about bumping around on buses with Jen Gillum and Cheryl Miller and Nancy Lieberman and flying Southwest 3 to a row. And, you know, those things happened. And so in this day and age, when I remember when the highlight would be Lisa Leslie dunking a ball and that'd be it, because it was such an anomaly. And now you talk about Sabrina. I saw her in a commercial with Chris Paul last night for State Farm. You know, I mean, that is progress, Annie. I think that there is that space. And I just feel like in this new media world that we're in, finding the distribution and the platform that's always there, rather than, okay, we have a random NBA team A against NBA team B on a major network on a Tuesday night. Why do you always have to shove that down our throats, is my point, especially in April when things start to ramp up towards the playoffs. And I'm not looking for you to go into a bash session on this. It's just my view that we in our industry can do a lot better, but it's all based off of clicks. And I look at that and say, I don't care if I get one click, as long as it's something where we're making a difference and making a change.
Well, and the people in charge usually are white males in making those decisions. Mm-hmm.
When you're in boardrooms on these discussions, because you've talked about this, it sounds like, I don't think you're just espousing some beliefs with me. What's it like when you're out there on the WNBA circuit?
Well, I will say, you know, for 25 years, and you look at the leadership that we've had, certainly with David Stern stepping up, and as you said, Jerry Colangelo was probably the first owner to step in, and Robert has done a great job as far as staying with the Phoenix Mercury. He loves the team. He loves your, you know, the players and so forth. But Val Ackerman, you know, the leadership that this league needed, she was spectacular. And then we had Donna Orender and Laurel Richie and then Lisa Borders. And now Kathy Engelbert. And it's a time where Kathy Engelbert, I mean, the partnerships that she's developing are very, very strong. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a key. And I think that those things will also help turn around as far as the exposure. It's the right thing to do. I mean, whether it's the women's soccer, whether it's the women's golf, whether it's, you know, the WNBA, women's sports is important in this country. Yes. Because women are making decisions in your household. And to show that your daughters and your sons, that you have mothers out there playing a game. Mm-hmm. And again, whatever sport it is, that they're doing something that they love to do and they're making a living at it. And what is wrong with that? I find it interesting because the attacks early on in this league of, you know, why women should get paid the same, why women, you know, should be playing basketball or soccer or, you know, just the other sports. But it's like, why should women be denied to do something that they love? And so I think there has been a lot of changes and the strong voices that women have. And I really think, you know, the NBA, the support has been so important. But I also think that the women have been so out there as far as what's going on in social media today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 5 years ago, Minnesota Lynx are the ones that, you know, they were already kneeling 5 years ago, as our league did. And I know we did here in Phoenix, too. And that just bringing attention to what is going on in this country, not only with racism, but sexism and so many other issues. And the women are not afraid to speak out. They are mothers that are strong in their beliefs because they have children that they're playing. They're playing the game and they have children. And a lot of them that have gone overseas, you know, their kids are traveling with them that when they're very young, or they have to work things out with their families to take care of their children. We had Helen Darling in the league who had triplets. And yeah. we know Dawana Bonner had twins, you know. So mm-hmm. A lot of these women are very aware of what goes on as far as, you know, their health issues. And I think Neko Gumake is the new president, which players union. And then, you know, Tamika Catchings, who was, you know, really strong in that. And now is, you know, with the Indiana Pacer organization with the Fever. We've got Renee Montgomery, who's now an owner. And, you know, just things are really trickling down. And I think women are kind of taking control of their own decisions.
What goes through your mind when you see something like the NCAA women's basketball tournament when they don't have a weight room and they don't have food and we're here in 2021? What goes through your mind?
It just, you know, as much as things have changed, they haven't changed. The same thing with the golf. You saw the regionals in Florida. They pulled the golf because they said it wasn't championship, you know, ready. And all the players and coaches were saying, what do you mean championship ready? We've been playing. And they just basically didn't bother to drain the bunkers. And so it's decisions like that. Who are making those decisions? Certainly we know, and people will be very critical of Title IX. But we know that even before Title IX, Brad, you know that football and men's basketball, they've always been the moneymaker. Mm-hmm. Baseball doesn't bring it in. Track and field doesn't bring it in. Tennis doesn't bring it in. Swimming doesn't bring it in. You know, you go down the sports on the men's side, those sports don't bring in money. So they rely on men's basketball and football also. So just because now you've got to spread it out a little bit more, and people are upset about that. So when the women are now, you know, in the mix, how does the NCAA say, well, you don't, you know, you want this, you want this? Mm-hmm. Well, men's rowing wants this too, or men's tennis. So it's a dichotomy. It's like, well, and how can you say that? And then you not put a weight room out there for the women during basketball. And they continue to really make themselves look bad, quite honestly, the NCAA.
The new commissioner of the Pac-12 said in his opening statements that football and men's basketball are going to be the focus and getting the conference turned around. And that is something that raised a lot of eyebrows. And on one hand, I understand what he is saying from a revenue point of view, but I also believe he's not giving the women's side enough credit, because those that say that there's not ratings there, they're incorrect. The NCAA Women's Final Four brought in 4 million people, 4 million viewers, I should say. And so sets. So I hear that statement on one hand, and you could take offense to it, or you could say, okay, I get that business side. He's not saying poo-poo to women's sports. How did you take that, or did you not see it?
I didn't really see it. I mean, okay. I heard what he had said. But again, my explanation, what I just said, it's always been football and basketball. The focus.
Men's.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And we know that that's the money. Unless, you know, when Pat Summitt was alive in Tennessee, women's basketball was, or Geno in Connecticut, and Kim Mulkey when she was at Baylor. And so there are pockets. Now, are the minor sports bringing it in, or how are they going to be looked at? You know, not just women's sports, but men's minor sports. How are they going to be allocated to? And so we can talk about men's basketball and men's football. And there's a lot of colleges out there that don't have football. Mm-hmm. So what about those programs?
Yeah, Gonzaga, West Coast Conference. So, no, that's right. No, that's
and
true.
All Title IX is, actually Title IX was an education bill for educators to get paid equal. And it's become the calling card for women in sports. But in saying that, it's all we want is equal treatment.
Before I get you out of here, in the Hall of Famer Annie Myers Drysdale with us for a few minutes. I'm not saying get out of here, but I don't want to let you go without you being able to talk about Elevate Phoenix, and also to talk about your Dare to Dream and a few things that you're involved in that people may not be aware of.
Well, Elevate Phoenix started about 11 years ago with Tom Lehman, and I was already at Phoenix in 2007. I got there as a general manager for the Mercury. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't really involved with any charities and so forth. In California, I was very involved with Special Olympics with Rafer Johnson and being at UCLA and so forth. But Elevate Phoenix, they came into the arena, and I thought, wow, this is something, because it's basically about going into the inner cities, South Phoenix and Maryvale, and into the schools. And it is a curriculum. It's a class in the school system. And so it's 24/7, these mentors that are helping these kids through life. And we have found, we're in our 11th year, that 98% of our kids are graduating. Mm-hmm. And they're coming back. We're in Phoenix, in Arizona. I think we're one of the poorest graduating in education in the country. And so to have this curriculum and to teach life skills and character, and to give them direction, not only to go to schools, which we've got GCU and Gateway, some of the colleges that are giving scholarships, and now we have New Mexico State involved. Mm. So these kids are going to school on scholarships. And not only education wise, also trade schools, that there are other things for them to do. So, Tom Lehman's been involved, and just such great leadership on the board with Ed Beasley and so many others. But, I'm very fortunate to be a part of it. But I know, too, Sons Charities, I will say, they're involved with over 200 charities in this community. And it's amazing what the Phoenix Suns gives back, as I think all the pro leagues do in this city. But Devin Booker, who made donations to so many charities, mm-hmm. Elevate Phoenix was one of those. And so we're very proud of that. And we know that we're making a difference in a lot of kids' lives.
Dare to Dream. Tell me about that.
Well, it was creative because they had me involved, and I was involved with a lot of things in doing things with the kids and going to the schools and so forth. And I came up with a couple of different ideas and breakfasts. And actually we had an event with Al McCoy, and Al and I listened to some of the high school kids and had written down their stories. And so we kind of evaluated that. And it became a breakfast where it was kind of when Title IX had their anniversary. And we had kids from, I think it was fifth and sixth graders, we had write a story about a woman athlete, and they could pick anybody, but they had to research it. And so it was kind of a breakfast, and we would honor them and their parents. And they came to Phoenix Country Club, who has been very supportive. And we had this breakfast for the family, for fourth, fifth, and sixth graders who won their both boys and girls. And then it became a breakfast where we had corporate sponsors. And now we had our high school kids come in and tell their stories at the tables. And we would honor educators. And so it was Dare to Dream that, you know, anything is possible. And so in honoring the educators, for me, my brother David, who played in the NBA, we lost him a few years ago of cancer. And my oldest sister, Patty, just passed away a few years ago of cancer. And so to me, the breakfast is in their names, honoring them because they were teachers. So it's pretty special and to have that, to be a part of family. And it's still, again, about education.
That's so cool.
And the last thing.
Yeah, yeah.
We've got a rebound. And are they ever going to call a 3-second call on the Lakers?
Listen to you. Are you screaming? Like, come on, guys, 3 seconds.
No. Well, usually when I'm by myself, I'm pretty reserved. I am.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was with my son DJ last night, and he was pretty quiet, but we're just like, you get in the crowd, and the crowd is just, the energy is awesome. And so it's hard not to stand and yell, but I have to watch myself a little bit.
No, but you know, here's the thing. I wrote this the other day. I went to game one and got there like 10 a.m. and there's lines out in front of the little restaurants that are just to the east of the arena. And people were there early. It doesn't matter. They had LeBron and Kobe jerseys. The Laker fans are everywhere. It's fine. I don't care. They get into the arena and there's a vibe and there's an energy. And everybody who's been masked up and has been pent up for the last 14 months can actually go out and go crazy for about 2.5 hours. And that is what sports is for. It's meant to be a distraction from all the stuff that's going on. And the last two games have been terrific here in Phoenix. I just think it's great to see the energy. And yeah, the disdain and the hatred for the Lakers, the beat LA and the Laker fans saying, let's go Lakers and all that stuff. That's what it's about. That's what it's about at the end of the day. So I'm just thrilled we're back playing.
It is. And I love that fans are supportive of their teams. What I am sad about is because whether we've been cooped up for the last year and so forth, how mean people are. How angry they are.
Yeah, that's true.
And I know sports is a great way to release a lot of your energy. But I also think that a lot of that is for them, you know, certainly getting all that out. But, you know, you don't have to rip people personally and so forth. And I know that, as a matter of fact, in the WNBA, Kurt Miller from Connecticut was suspended because as a coach, you know, what he said to a player. And then last night we heard another comment in the WNBA. But, you know, even players, too, I think they take it over the top in some of the things that they say. So especially with all the social things that are going on, I think there needs to be a little bit more kindness. You can support your teams and root for them and so forth. But, you know, let's be kind.
It's a good way to put it. And we'll end on that note. I appreciate your time and your insight, Annie. Thanks.
It's always great to see you, Brad.
There's Annie Myers-Drysdale, the Hall of Famer, and it's good to catch up with her. And we are back with more after this timeout.